put your hand on your chest, just to the left of your sternum. Can you feel that? It's a pumping sound. Your heart starts pumping even before you're born. In utero, it's only as big as a gum nut. Over a lifetime, until it finally stops, if you live into old age, it will pump around 3 trillion times. Dr. Nikki Stamp has devoted her life to this organ. She's a heart surgeon in Perth, and she's the author of a book called Can You Die of a Broken Heart? Now, Nikki, before we get on to that question, whether you can die of a broken heart, tell us where your interest in the human heart comes from.
It's a very good question, actually. It's quite a long journey. I started out being obsessed with the heart when I was small. I used to see Victor Chang on TV working on transplants and mechanical hearts. And I'd written in my year 3 journal, when I grow up, I want to be a heart surgeon and finish the work of Victor Chang.
So wow.
I was a very precocious 8-year-old.
Yes, I was going to say that must have been at about 8. Yeah.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. But I got a bit waylaid, but eventually found my way back to medicine. And when I was at medical school, I was always going to be a surgeon, and I got given a rotation in heart surgery, and I loved it so much, I never left. It was fascinating.
Well, we attach so much meaning to the heart, you know, beyond the medical, about love and emotion, you know, be still my beating heart.
Right.
Tell us what it is like to see a human heart exposed in the operating theatre.
Look, it never gets old. It is still a beautiful organ. And I think that the part that is over and over again the most impressive thing you ever see is when a heart that's been stopped to have the surgery or for a transplant, for example, when it starts beating again, it is the most incredible sight you'll ever see. And it just shows you how resilient it is. But at the same time, it's very, very delicate, very, very beautiful, important organ that needs extra special care.
Well, when your heart does actually physically hurt with sadness, and it does, is there a medical explanation for that?
There is, actually. So any kind of stress, whether it be bereavement, you know, someone's just passed away, a relationship has come to an end, work stress, even natural disasters have been associated with this. This incredible event sets off this huge cascade of emotion in your brain, and that in turn links to a number of our hormonal systems. So your body is programmed to pump out hormones like cortisol, which is a great stress hormone, or things like adrenaline and noradrenaline. And what they are meant to do is protect us from stress, and they do in that very short space of time. But when they carry on, or when they're incredibly intense, those effects that are supposed to be positive, that are supposed to help you run from a tiger back in the day, whereas now it's running from something else, stress or bereavement, they actually end up having a negative impact on your body. And that's why we actually do see what we call disordered grief, where the grief is very, it's very raw and it persists, or sometimes it causes physical ailments, which is one thing that we really need to be aware of with ourselves.
So it is possible to die of a broken heart?
It's an excellent question. And the short answer is yes, but there is a couple of caveats on that. First of all, most of us won't. And we've all been there. We've all been brokenhearted during our life. It's an unfortunate a side effect of the human condition. We will have our heart broken some way or another. And it does hurt, and you do feel terrible, and you do think, I'm never, ever going to make it through this. But most of us do, without physical ailments, without serious problems. But there's a small proportion of people who are brokenhearted who do get sickness from it. And well, that can just be... Sorry, go on, Amanda.
Well, I'm just thinking of, you know, there's a pretty famous example from not very long ago, Debbie Reynolds, the actress, who
exactly
died, I think, the day after Carrie Fisher, her daughter, died.
Right, exactly. And the immediate catch cry was, well, clearly she's died of a broken heart. She loved her daughter so much, as you would, that she died of a broken heart. And that's kind of right, but kind of not. It's an interesting sort of grey area. So I believe Debbie Reynolds died of a stroke, but in that initial 30 days, we believe, after someone dies, the risk of your partner, family member, someone very close to you dying is actually a bit higher. That's particularly high for people whose relatives pass away from suicide. And again, it's just this stress response. And what it does is it causes all these hormonal effects. It causes your blood to get very sticky. It reduces your immune system, and it reduces your self-care as well. It's a time when we potentially turn to not so good coping strategies. You might smoke or drink or take drugs, or sometimes we just
generally not look after yourself.
That's right. Yeah. Yes, bury yourself in a tub of ice cream or what, you know, whatever your comfort food of choice is. But it is during that time that we do see this little blip, this rise, this in people who are more likely to pass away. And it tends to be people who have pre-existing conditions, but very rarely it's not. And that's when we get a broken heart syndrome, which is a completely different kettle of fish altogether.
Well, it's affairs of the heart that we're discussing here in Life Matters with Dr. Nikki Stamp, who's a heart surgeon and the author of Can You Die of a Broken Heart? And if you've ever felt your heart physically affected by heartbreak, perhaps you'd care to tell us about it too on Facebook. Nikki, beyond the sadness of a broken heart, what about depression? Does depression actually affect your heart health?
Yeah, it does. It's very interesting. When I first started out at medical school, the things that were associated with having heart disease were, you know, the usual suspects: smoking, diet, exercise, diabetes, you know, these very sort of organic, very sciencey kind of conditions. Whereas in more recent years, we're starting to see depression included amongst those risk factors for heart disease. And it is a little bit chicken and egg. Having heart disease or having any serious illness does make you more prone to getting depression. But also it seems that depression makes you more prone to serious illness. So we know that in people who have heart attacks, for example, that they are more likely to do poorly after their heart attack if they have depression at the same time. So we think, again, it is something to do with this stress response, this the way that your mind is linked to your body through hormones and other sort of cell signaling type processes that cause an unsustainable amount of stress on the heart, causes your blood to get sticky. And again, it's also this other side of the coin, which is this your behavioural type, the things that you do, whether you take care of yourself or not. So depression is starting to declare itself as something that we really need to be aware of in terms of its effect on our physical health in the short and long term.
All right. So physically, when you're having a heart attack, what does it feel like? What's going on?
Well, see, that is an interesting question, because most of us would associate that feeling of a heart attack with what we see on TV, which is a middle-aged man grabbing his chest and falling to the ground. That's not that common. In fact, a number of people present with a whole host of other issues or other symptoms, including just being short of breath. So they used to be able to mow the lawn, or they used to be able to cycle with the kids and now they can't. Things like pain in the back or pain in the arm or pain in the jaw, but no pain in the chest. These are sort of unusual symptoms. And for women, it's even worse.
Yes, something that I didn't know until I read your book is that women and men experience heart attacks differently. Explain the differences.
Well, see, women have different symptoms. So women are more likely to have these unusual symptoms. They're these funny niggling pain in the jaw, this funny niggling pain in the tummy. They don't quite fit that usual profile. So it's very hard for the woman herself to pick it up. Plus, there's a whole host of other things that generally happen in a woman's life. They're too busy looking after everybody else, or, you know, they don't sort of necessarily prioritise or recognise their own health issues. And then when you present to a doctor or a nurse, they have the same issue. They don't quite realise what's going on. And so a number of women will present with symptoms of heart disease, but it won't be picked up. So that's, we're not 100% sure why that is. Obviously, there's some social issues there. You know, we're too busy, or, you know, we healthcare workers tend to be a little bit more dismissive of women's symptoms, which is really disappointing. But there's also something biological. The difference between a man's heart and a woman's heart is actually biological. And there's a lot of research going into this at the moment. We're still learning more about it every day. But all of this ends up resulting in women doing much worse when they have a heart attack as opposed to a man.
See, that's so contrary to, you know, the common perception that it's heart attack is much more prevalent among men. They're the ones who really suffer from this.
Well, it is correct and it isn't. So just by numbers alone, men do have more numbers of heart attacks.
Right.
But not by much, not by much. So women do have quite a lot of heart attacks, and it is around the world the leading cause of death. Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death for women, which again, a lot of people don't know. You're three times more likely to die of a heart attack than breast cancer, but we just don't know that. The awareness isn't there. And so it is kind of an awareness thing at the get-go, because if we don't realise that we're at risk of this, and likewise healthcare workers don't realise that women are at risk of this, then that's where we're starting to get this divergence in treatment, the just divergence in outcomes, and it's something that's really got to change.
Well, now, as a heart surgeon, Nikki, your job is to fix people's hearts or replace it with a heart transplant. Now, I remember last year here in Life Matters, I spoke with a couple, Paul and George, and it was on the 30th anniversary of George's heart transplant. And Paul, his partner, got back in touch just recently to say that George has now received a new donor heart, which made me think, you know, how long does a heart you've got from a transplant generally last for?
That is such an amazing story. It really, I'm going to have to use a pun here, but I can't think of any other way to say it, but it really warms the heart to hear that sort of lovely story. It's an interesting thing, because when heart transplants first started being done, and that was 50 years ago, we just had the 50th anniversary of the first heart transplant.
Wasn't that Christian Barnard in 1967?
1967, December 1967. And that first recipient, he only lived around 2 weeks. He died of infection. And at that time, that was kind of the standard. People just did not survive after a heart transplant. And over time, we've gotten really, really good at looking after people with heart transplants. But it's not a cure. It's a treatment for heart disease, for a number of types of heart disease. So around the world at the moment, the roughly average survival post a heart transplant is somewhere between 12 and 13 years. Now, in Australia, we have
George did well with 30 years.
He did amazing, amazing. And I believe Fiona Coote, who I'm sure a lot of Australians are aware of, she was transplanted twice as a child by Victor Chang in Sydney. You know, she's out to, I think, 32 years. I think the longest survivor around the world is around 33 years. And he got a transplant in the early days in the 1980s. It is more common that we're seeing people live much, much longer than what we did 50 years ago, which is fantastic. But we are seeing a number of people with all kinds of organ transplants who have that transplant. And that transplanted organ, in the case of a heart, for example, is subject to a number of problems that are very, very specific to a transplanted heart. And they do come back, and a very select group of them can actually have another transplant. So we do that, not very often, but we do that from time to time now.
All right. Now, Nikki, we have a question from a listener who wants to know about something known as broken heart disease, Takotsubo syndrome, which
That's right.
The listener says mostly afflicts women and usually follows a stressful event.
Right. So Takotsubo, it's a Japanese word. It was only described in Japan in the 1990s, and it is sort of colloquially known as broken heart syndrome. And it looks very similar to a heart attack when the patient presents. They have a very similar picture as a heart attack. They've got this chest pain or something similar. But it does tend to follow a seriously stressful event. So bereavement is very common in women, and in men it tends to be physical trauma, but all in all, women are more prone to it. And again, we get this sort of link between our brain and our hormones. And when you experience this stressful event, your brain pushes out all these hormones. And it seems to be that the people who are prone to this have a different way that they push out these hormones. They may suddenly give out a huge, huge rush of hormones like adrenaline, but it's also how the heart responds to it. And in people who have hearts that are prone to this, they get a kind of heart attack. And the reason it's called Takotsubo is obviously it's a Japanese finding, I suppose, but it looks like, the heart looks like Japanese fisher pots, which are Takotsubo. So that's why we have this big mouthful of a word to try and describe this illness. Mm-hmm. But it is quite serious. Fortunately, it's incredibly uncommon. We don't see a lot of it. But it's interesting that in the Christchurch earthquakes in 2011, there was a big surge in Takotsubo with this hugely stressful event, as we know, as we all watched from around the world, poor Christchurch really suffering after this earthquake. So we would see a handful of cases a year, but at that time, 21 people, all women, were diagnosed with Takotsubo.
That is so extraordinary, isn't it? So
it's an amazing, yeah. It's an amazing disease, but not so amazing to have, but it's incredibly interesting. And it's a wonderful example of how important our social and emotional health is to our physical health.
And Dr. Nikki Stamp is a cardiothoracic surgeon in Perth. Her book is called Can You Die of a Broken Heart? A Heart Surgeon's Insight into What Makes Us Tick. Nikki, thank you so much for your insights into what makes us tick. Good on you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Life Matters with Amanda Smith.